Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in.
This is the Herd.
Wherever you may be in, however you may be making this part of your day. Thanks so much. I'm Doug Gottlieb filling in for Colin Cowherd, who I am told, little birdie told me, Colin actually himself, feeling much better. Feeling good. Like he should. Welcome in. Colin's feeling much better. He's good. He's going to come back lean, mean, hot take, metaphor spitting machine. Oh, thank you. My man Brandon Whedon will join us in 15 minutes. What was worse for the Chiefs, the plan or the lack of adjustments to that plan? Plus, we got a great best for last. Really, really good best for last. You know, I've seen the videos now of the championship boat parade celebration. And first, it was cool. It was cool. It was very distinctly Tampa, right? In that it's warm enough to wear shorts and a shirt. It's on boats. It's cool with Tampa. Like, all of that is, like, super unique. It's also during this time of pandemic, it does give you hope. I'm sorry if where you are, where we are, we're going to have to wear masks everywhere we go. Things are starting to open up. Florida, a little bit different. They do things differently there, okay? Like, I'm not going to sit here and cast judgment over a bunch of people who are able to, based upon what their local officials deem as acceptable, are able to go maskless. I'm not going to be that guy. But it felt like our first kind of national celebration, didn't it? Like, we haven't had anything to celebrate. It's been hard. It's been hard to have fun the last year. We're a year in. 11 months, whatever. Close enough, right? Round up. And I saw Tom Brady, and it's interesting. Before the game, so my daughters are 14. We moved to Southern California. We had lived in Southern California 2 years. So they're 14 years old. Five and a half of their 14 years, they've lived in Connecticut, okay, which is nine of those, you know, most of those years, some of those years, New England, because Connecticut's kind of, part of it is, it's like New Yorkachusetts, right? The southern part is more New Yorkers, and it's the suburbs, and the northern part feels much more like New England, much more Boston. And so that's why it is epicenter for Yankees-Red Sox rivalry. It is epicenter for Jets and Giants and Bills and Patriots. Oh, my. But they like Tom Brady. But they're kind of tired of the Tom Brady thing. Like, Super Bowl and Tom Brady again? Ugh, can't watch. I know how this ends, you know? And I think most of America is kind of like that. Like, the numbers weren't great. And it's just one of the... We get kind of fatigue over it. And, you know, if you think of Tom Brady, think of how many of the things that he does are not relatable, right? Like, he does UGG commercials, right? That's not like a guy's guy. It's not like Wranglers like Brett Favre is. He's married to a supermodel. Nothing wrong, like, who wouldn't if they could? But that's... You and I couldn't have a conversation with a supermodel, let alone marry one, have kids, and have a successful life, right? I mean, there's so many parts to him, which his hair, what's going on there? His face, how's he looking younger? His teeth, does he have better toothpaste, right? Is his Crest 3D whitening toothpaste better than my Crest 3D whitening toothpaste? What's going on? How does he look younger? Well, of course, he's got some TB. He can pay for his own chef. He can, he's in such a higher plane and tech. Like, I cannot, he's like a mythical creature. He glows when he comes. I mean, he plays an entire NFL game. Okay. Like when Peyton Manning, you guys remember when Peyton Manning would take off his helmet? He'd have that big, like, rectangular indention on his forehead. And because he was wearing a helmet strapped to his head for the last 3 hours. Tom Brady takes off his helmet and his hair is perfect. His uniform, there's no grass in his uniform. He even looks like he smells good. Really hard for me to have the feels for Tom Brady, right? And then yesterday, he's on a boat and he's wearing a knee brace or like a knee sleeve with some shorts. Okay, first thing is knee sleeve with some shorts is classic dad move. The only thing better would have been if he had cargo shorts on, right? If he had like cargo shorts on and an Old Navy t-shirt, you're like, you know what? Okay, like Brady's the guy. So he's got some shorts on and a knee sleeve. And I understand he's a professional athlete. Knee probably hurts, but really on a boat? But that's Brady. And then he gets off the boat and he is hammered. Hammered. He's white boy wasted. Hey, man. He's like fist bumping dudes, giving guys uncomfortably long hugs. He's, I love you, man. I love you. I love you. He's kind of a close talker now. All of a sudden, you're like, whoa. But here's the thing. And we all know this to be true. Who you are as a drunk is who you are as a person, right? You're an angry drunk, you're an angry guy. You're a quiet drunk, you're a really quiet, like recluse sort of guy. A little scary sometimes, right? A little dark. You're a dark drunk, you're like a little dark. Don't give that guy some Jack Daniels. He'll start talking some conspiracy theories on you and you'll be like, oof, check please. Let's find out what's in that guy's search engine, right? If you're a happy drunk, you're a happy dude. It's not just that they won a Super Bowl. It's that drinking, it takes away all those inhibitions and who you really are comes out. It's authentic. And you know what? He was authentically likable. Now, he tweeted out that it was just a little avocado tequila, right? And you know what? If it was White Claw or Zima, we would have liked him just the same. We would have made fun of him, but it's Brady. He's 43. He's like, yo, look, I can only drink White Claws. All right. Don't act like you haven't tried a White Claw. You may not have a sixer in the freezer, okay, trying to cool it down after work, but you've tried a White Claw. You've had a Zima in your life. No, I've never had a Zima. Of course you did. Now, whether you dropped the Jolly Rancher in there and you had it last weekend, completely different story. But Brady, you go and look at the comments. Not that social media is the end-all be-all, but you look at the comments, good for him. I hated Tom Brady now, kind of like him. Because if you went through the pandemic, left your family behind, went to a new football team, struggled early on, brought in a couple of your boys, won 3 road games, won a Super Bowl in your quasi hometown, not really in front of many of your hometown fans, at 43 years old, proving that you still had it, you too would like to have a cold one and maybe a couple of cold ones, maybe a sixer of cold ones. Celebrate with a little Lombardi trophy, a boat, and some sun in your face. And yeah, that day drinking, that feels good with a dub. This was his teammate, Steve McClendon, a defensive tackle for the Buccaneers, last hour on playing with Tom Brady and what separates him from other quarterbacks.
All right, man, it was absolutely amazing, man. Tom is everything and more. It's hard to just say one thing about Tom, but the one thing I would say, his preparation, his love for the game, the way he put the time and the hours in for the game, he makes you want to work that much harder.
Makes you want to work that much harder. That's pretty spectacular, right? Of somebody to say, he makes you want to work that much harder. You see that dude doing it, who's already done it 6 times previous to this year and 9 Super Bowls, and you're like, I want to get some of that. If he's in, or that's what I was telling you about Jared Goff, right? That was the thing with Jared Goff. When John Wolford, who's a nobody in the league, is outworking, out-preparing, and gets more respect in the locker room than the quarterback that took the Rams to the Super Bowl, and you can't fool those guys. You can't fool Steve McClendon. You can't fool Aaron Donald. You can't fool them. And that's why when he gets hammered after winning a Super Bowl, you're like, hell yeah, he deserves to get hammered. You know why? Because he worked his butt off. I did not grow up liking cold beer. I did not. I mean, I remember I had a couple beers in high school, and I was like, this is gross. My dad was not a beer guy until later on in his life. He's like me. We both like Mexican beer. And I went to college, and at Notre Dame, everybody drank beer. And I still wasn't really a beer guy. After my first year at Oklahoma State, this is summer of 1998, I stayed in town for a couple of weeks. And they get you a summer job. And my summer job, a lot of guys, they were like sweeping at the Quick Trip, right? They're sweeping up and refilling the ice. Mine, I was like the one-man demo team for a guy who was redoing houses. And keep in mind, it's Oklahoma in the summer. It's hotter than, it's hotter than hell. And there's no air conditioning because you're remodeling a house and I got to pump up. So you just go in and with a sledgehammer and they tell you, knock out that wall and then clean it all up and you got a mask on and that's what you do. And you sweat. And about 5 o'clock, those guys were like, hey, we're going to get a sixer. You want to throw in on, you know, you want to throw in on a case and have some beer. And right. If you've ever worked for a living, and I have not done it very much, but if you've ever worked for a living in the hot summer sun and then you've drank a cold beer, you're like, oh God, that feels so good. And you feel great because you feel like you earned it. That entire day led up to that moment where you earned it. Now consider Tom Brady, very different. Obviously, he's not breaking down his fingernails. He's not sweating inside of a remodeled house. But the idea is he worked for 7, 8 months, 9 months, without the family around, without the normal fandom, through a new team, a new coaching staff, trying to rework some things. And yesterday was the, you know, right? Could have been, that's probably the first tequila he's had the entire year. Oh, and it becomes incredibly relatable. Ask yourself right now, truth, you could have hated Tom Brady for the last 15 years, Spygate, Deflategate, the arrogance of the Patriots, and they beat the Ravens in the playoffs. Guess you need to look up the rule book. Remember that? That was Tom Brady. Guess you need to look up the rule book. And the hair and the teeth and the Ugg boots. Ugh! Then you watch him yesterday, white boy waste, and you're like, you know what? I kind of like Tommy. Kind of like him. Even if he was drinking a White Claw or a Zima with a little Jolly Rancher in it. You know what? We're good, Tommy. I feel you. Should Russell Wilson have kept his comments in-house? We'll ask a former starting quarterback, Brandon Weeden. He joins us next in The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb in for Colin Cowherd. Sometimes driving is great, but sometimes not so great, like when it's pouring outside, like when it's snow. The snow is swirling. That's when you need the new Michelin Endurance XT silicone wiper blades designed to repel water, snow, and ice. Get yours today only at Walmart. Brandon Weeden's a good friend of mine. He's a former first-round pick of the Cleveland Browns. And, of course, started for the Browns, started for the Cowboys, started for the Texans, played for the Titans as well. And he joins us here in The Herd on Fox Sports Radio. Brandon, what was your reaction to not just the Super Bowl, but what the Buccaneers' defense did to the Chiefs' offense in the Super Bowl?
I was surprised, man. I'll be honest. I mean, you know, you're not used to seeing the Chiefs kind of sputter and not make those adjustments needed. Obviously, losing the tackle, we talked about that last week. I mean, losing, you know, having both tackles out is a problem, especially against a front like that, and they weren't really able to overcome it. And pretty much from the jump, I mean, they got after Mahomes, and you know, everybody's seen the stat of how far he ran around before he threw, those pass attempts. It's just, it was kind of shocking to see. You know, they weren't able to really run it, and by the time halftime came, they were down, 21-6, and it kind of became a throw fest. But, yeah, Todd Bowles and that defense, you know, to go on the road and beat, Aaron Rodgers a couple weeks before and then do that in the Super Bowl, man, that was an unbelievable performance.
What was more surprising, though, that their offensive line didn't seem to prepare for the pressure, and then they didn't change. They didn't react to it. What was more surprising, that the game plan seemed flawed or the reaction was equally flawed?
I mean, a little bit of both. I would say maybe the game plan, just because we've been so accustomed to seeing Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy kind of mold what they're going to do and make changes, you know, throughout games. You know, their changes on the sideline have been just masterful pretty much you know, Mahomes' entire career. So, you know, you're used to seeing them, you know, find ways to, you know, they tried early. They tried with tight ends to help block, and you could tell that, you know, they weren't winning on the outside because of, you know, the coverages that Todd Bowles was playing on the back end. And then, you know, when they did just rush four, you know, they weren't able to get shots over the top to Tyreek. They did a great job of bottling him up. Kelce did his deal, but just not enough, you know, just not enough. There was, you know, again, that, in my opinion, on both sides of the ball, I think the difference was in the trenches. I just think the Buccaneers on defense pinned their ears back and made Mahomes rough, made a rough night for him. I mean, that, you know, we talked about it last week, me and you, Doug. I mean, it's like, you know, name the last good offense that had a really bad offensive line. And I can't think of one, you know. And so it starts up front, and unfortunately, Kansas City was undermanned and pretty much got dominated from the jump.
Yeah, it was surprising, though, to me that you had 2 weeks prepared knowing you were going to have some issues. I mean, even with a healthy offensive line, you might have issues against the Buccaneers.
Right.
And you didn't put in some schemes where you had a higher percentage of six and seven men kind of in protection. Brandon Whedon, our guest in the Herd, Doug Gottlieb filling in for Colin. What was your feeling on the officiating?
Oh, I don't think it was great. I mean, there, you know, there was some ticky-tacky on the one on Tyron in the end zone. I don't really think that ball was catchable. Earlier before that, when Brady threw the tipped interception, the hold on the outside was a little tic-tac, in my opinion, especially in the Super Bowl. With that being said, I don't think it was the difference. I mean, it was not a very well-officiated game, but we kind of saw that through the playoffs, and there's some pretty bad officiating, some missed calls, you know, unfortunately, we kind of became the storyline, which is unfortunate with, you know, as good as those quarterbacks are and you know, as well as Brady and that offense played and stuff like that. But, yeah, very, very average, especially in the first half. I think it got a little bit better as the game went on. But, you know, in a game like that, I mean, you know, you don't want to see the officials. I mean, you want to see the players play and you know, call the obvious ones. But they were a little tic-tac early on.
Okay, you as a former quarterback, what is it about Brady? Right, like explain how winning follows Tom Brady.
Well, I mean, I think guys around him just find a way to step their game up. I don't think they want to let him down. I think he just has the ability to will the guys around him, and you know, whether that be, you know, play or, I mean, there's been games where he's done a couple interceptions, three interceptions, and found a way to win. You know, and that's, you can't really teach that. I think that's kind of, you know, that's 23 years of doing it in the NFL or however long he's been playing, 22 years, whatever it is. You know, that's, you know, knowing in crucial situations to make big plays and not compound mistakes. I think he's really good at that. I think, you know, he's able to, you know, when the time's the biggest, he's able to find a way to step up and make those plays. And then, you know, in crucial situations, don't hurt your team. You know, it's okay to punt sometimes and stuff like that. But you look at the game the other night, you know, they had an unbelievable plan. They came in, they knew they could dominate the line of scrimmage, they handed the ball to Leonard Fournette and Ronald Jones, and they ran wild. And then the play-action game off that, which Tom Brady loves to do, it was wide open. And the pop passes to Gronk and take a couple shots here and there. I mean, they pretty much could do whatever they wanted to do. But, you know, Brady just he has the ability to get the guys around him to step up and play their best in crucial situations. And, again, I think that's a respect factor and a large part why, in my opinion, he's the GOAT.
You and I saw Mahomes a lot in college. Obviously, you played in the Big 12. I played basketball in the Big 12. We watched the league a ton, no matter what we're doing. And I felt, look, were they getting manhandled up front? Yes. Did they not run the ball enough? Yes. But some of the bad habits of Mahomes came back out, right? Some of the things he used to do in college where running when he doesn't have to and trying to make the impossible play when it's just not there. Is that a fair assessment of what kind of spiraled with Mahomes?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he wasn't comfortable. But, you know, at the same time, I mean, how many times have we seen him make plays and just pull a rabbit out of the hat? And you're like, oh, my God, you know, this guy did it again. How does he do this? And, I mean, call a spade a spade. A couple of those throws, and one where he's going down, he's horizontal to the ground, and he throws it right
hit the guy in the face mask.
Yeah,
hit him in the face mask.
If he completes that, I mean, we're whether they win or lose, we're still going to be seeing that highlight. So, I mean, you know, even the one in the end zone, you know, where he was going to his left and ran around and, I mean, hit the dude right in the forehead. I think it was Tyreek. Maybe not the forehead, but, you know, Tyreek had a chance to catch that one. So, yeah, I mean, he did. He, you know, he wasn't comfortable. And I've been in that situation where, you know, as Sam Darnold said, and he's not wrong, you start seeing ghosts a little bit. You know, the pressure that's really not there becomes – it gets a little claustrophobic in there. And you want to get out of the pocket and be able to see the field a little better. And he, you know, that's his game. He did that in college. I mean, he makes that wow play that you can't teach. He just has an innate ability to just make plays and pull some throws out of his ass that he normally isn't able to. But he's an unbelievable player. He's so much fun to watch. I mean, even that game where they really didn't have a chance. I mean, some of the plays he almost pulled off were unbelievable.
Yeah. No, it's pretty special. Russell Wilson was on Dan Patrick yesterday. And he said, you know, he'd like to have more say in some of the personnel stuff. And then afterwards, he talked to some reporters and he said, I'm tired of getting hit, which is a direct shot at the offensive line that he plays behind. Walter Jones was on local radio in Seattle. Take a listen to what he had to say about Russell Wilson.
I think you should leave that in-house. I think once you put that out there, now everybody's thinking that you don't appreciate the guys that you play with this year, even though you're where you need to be every year. You know, this team is right around that mark every year. So you have to credit that to Russell Wilson and the guys around him. But still, again, once you call those guys are like, wow, really? Like, we go to war with you every week. You know, we're trying our best not to get you hit. But still, again, though, for you to say that publicly, you're putting yourself out there on Front Street, and now you got everybody like now talking about what you're saying. So you always have to be careful.
What do you think of what Russell Wilson had to say?
Yeah, I agree with Walter. I think Russell's looking at that, and he's probably regretting what he said. You know, those are things that no matter how you feel, you just don't say them, and you don't say them publicly. You know, you may tell your wife that, and you may tell, you know, your closest buddies, but you know, you don't put that out there for the media to grab a hold of, especially in a pretty slow time now. The Super Bowl's over. There's not a whole lot to talk about, and obviously, anytime Russell Wilson talks, people listen. But you know, that's just, you know, those offensive linemen. I mean, that's a gut punch for them. You know, they're busting their asses to do what they can to protect them. You know, they've got some good players on the offensive line, but yeah, he took more shots. But at the same time, if you look back, and I haven't watched every snap of his, but I mean, he brings some of those hits on himself by getting out of the pocket and not standing there and getting rid of the ball on time and trying to throw the ball in rhythm. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, I would have to guess that he regrets saying those things, because that's just not a good feeling, you know, that you want, you know, amongst teammates and, you know, especially at that level, man. You're all pros, you're all grown men. It's your job, and anytime you kind of spout out like that, it just usually doesn't sit real well with the guys in that locker room.
We're seeing Jared Goff. He's going to get a fresh start. Now, the great thing for Goff is he's getting a fresh start. His GM came over with him, really, you know, traded for him, but he was the director of college scouting with the Rams, right? So he's a big part of the reason he was drafted. Wentz is probably going to get a fresh start as well. You were a guy, your first round pick with the Browns. They changed coaches after the first year. And then you're out, and you're in Dallas as a backup, getting a kind of a fresh start. What is that like to have experience as a starter, being a first round pick, and then needing a fresh start? What allows guys to figure out their game and get back?
Well, I think you kind of get out from underneath the microscope just a little bit, because you know he was a first overall pick. Obviously, all the expectations and stuff he's going to have, you know, with the Rams were high, and you know, game in and game out, you got to play well, or if you don't, you're gonna get crushed. And you know, when you get a fresh start like that, you go to a new place, has a little bit different culture. You know, you're able to kind of hopefully maybe make a spark and go somewhere where it's just, you kind of get the monkey off your back, where you're like, okay, I got out from underneath a bad situation that wasn't good for maybe him or the team or whoever it may be, and you kind of sit back, take a deep breath, and say, all right, let's reboot this thing and see if we can get back to doing what we're doing. I mean, you don't play in the National Football League unless you're a good player and you've had a lot of success at the collegiate level. So, I mean, it's clear that he's still got some in the tank. I think Goff is a good player, you know, maybe a little inconsistent, but a really good player. So I'm pulling for him. I think if he goes to Detroit, you know, they can keep Marvin Jones and keep some of those guys intact. I think he'll be fine up there. It's just, on the flip side, and I'm speaking out of both sides of my mouth, I'm more happy for Matt Stafford getting out of there because he gets a fresh start in the team that, in my opinion, I haven't seen the odds in Vegas, but they've got to be probably top two or three, four favorite to win the Super Bowl. I mean, they went from a really good team to, in my opinion, a great team just with adding Matthew Stafford as quarterback. So anytime you can get a fresh start, more times than not, it's just you can take a deep breath, sit back, and say, all right, let's reboot and get back to what we did to get us here. And I saw a little bit more success once I left Cleveland and was able to kind of get out from underneath that microscope a little bit.
You're close with Deshaun. You were Deshaun's backup when he got hurt. You started for Deshaun in Houston. To this point, they've offered no desires to trade him. You on my show last week, you said, I don't think any chance he plays for Houston again. This becomes like that staring contest, right? Who blinks first, or a game of chicken? What? How do you think this goes down in Houston?
I think he eventually gets out of there, and I may be wrong. I hope I'm right. I think, again, this is another situation that's the Texans, they just keep making moves that I just shake my head. I'm like, what are they doing? You know, who's calling the shots? What's really going on down there? I don't get it. I mean, even, stuff like, the equipment manager, Mike Parson, unbelievable guy, close with Deshaun. Maybe that's why they're doing it. Obviously, we saw Jamie Roots resigned. I mean, he may have been forced to resign. Who knows? I mean, just some of the moves they're making are just head-scratching. And I've talked to a couple guys down there, and they're at a loss for words. They don't really know how to put into words of what's happening and what's going to happen because it's just a mess. But I do. I think he gets out of there. May take some time. Positive for Houston is they're going to be able to get a truckload of first round picks and hopefully revamp that roster and get that roster where they want it. They don't have much draft capital right now, so we'll see. Like I said, I'm pulling for Deshaun. I want him to get out of there. I really do. I think he, there's a couple of places I'd love to see him go to have a shot to be on a contender from day one. And I think that's what's got to happen. I just think the bridge has been burned. I don't know if there's any way to kind of heal it and patch it up.
Okay, if you were in a victory parade, okay, would you have a knee brace on? Would you have a knee sleeve?
No, I saw that. I wasn't sure what that was all about. I probably would have been as drunk as he was when he was walking through that gate. But about the knee brace, I'm not real sure about the knee brace.
Dad stuff. Like all he needed was some cargo shorts, right? And like an Old Navy T-shirt. And you're like, he looks like every dad, right? Like if you mow the lawn with a knee brace on, like you're a dad. Like you're in your mid 40s, you're a dad.
So, you know what, though? When you pull up in a $2 million boat, the sweet as that thing was, you can wear whatever you want, man. You just won a Super Bowl. You can do whatever you want, but yeah.
How about he's tossing around the Lombardi Trophy? How about he's tossing around the Lombardi Trophy? He's like, don't worry, guys, I got six more. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm not even sure who caught it. Cameron Brate, was he on the other boat who caught it? I just hope it wasn't some of the front office guys or something. Fortunately, he caught that thing. It didn't go in the water, but yeah, that was. I was a little nervous for him. It sounded like his daughter was too, just from the clip I saw. But yeah. That was, looks like they had a hell of a time, man. I was a little jealous. It looked like a lot of fun.
Didn't it? It looked a little bit like you at Grand Lake. Only obviously you throw in the knee
that
brace.
Back in the day when I could party a little bit and not be hungover the next day and feel like crap.
Oh yeah, but listen, it was day drinking, so I'm sure there was an afternoon nap involved at some point.
That's true.
For Brady. There's an afternoon that day drinking in the sun in Florida, that gets you real quick. That gets you real quick.
Like he was having a good, him and Gronk always looks like he's having a good time. But they got after it, man. They deserved it. It looked like a lot of fun. I was a little jealous.
Everybody was jealous. Brandon, great stuff. Thanks for joining us.
You got it, buddy. See you.
My guy Brandon Wheaton, former first round pick of the Browns, started for three different franchises. Of course, played for the Titans as well. Let me get you to Rhyme Music with the news.
No. Turn on the news. This is the Herd Line News.
Well, Doug, we're actually going to start with golf. Yeah, golf. A little surprising, I know, in the middle of football season and everything. But it has a little bit of a football twist on it. You remember the match. It started with Tiger versus Phil Mickelson. Phil Mickelson getting the win. Then Tiger and Peyton Manning against Lefty and Tom Brady. Phil and Sir Charles getting the win over Steph Curry, Peyton Manning. Well, now there are reports the match part four featuring Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes. That's right, Doug. TMZ saying sources from those who are organizing the event are optimistic that they can work something out because the event will be for charity, of course, and Brady enjoyed his time last time on the match. No word yet on the pros that will be featured with them, whether it would be Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, or anyone else. Just that they are currently optimistic about Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes being involved.
I bet Pat Mahomes hits the hell out of golf ball, right? For a baseball player.
There was that video, I think it was... No, it was, I mean, yes, he can do that as well. But I think it was after his first year as a starter of them at Topgolf, and he was, yeah, just striping the ball.
I mean, like, now, look, I would say basketball players outside of, like, Andre Iguodala and a couple of these guys or Jordan, you know, basketball players are the guys that didn't grow up playing golf. But baseball, football, I know he's a hooper as well. Like, the baseball players hit the hell out of a golf ball. They just do. They absolutely tattooed.
Well, yeah, so speaking of, there was our guy, Mike Trout. Remember, there was a video of him also.
I mean, it's crazy.
I think it was spring training at the Topgolf in Arizona, and he was just...
just scalding a golf ball.
Yeah, unbelievable. But I guess Pat Mahomes, you know,
I guess totally believable. To me, it's totally believable.
Yeah.
Like, Mike Trout hits a golf ball a long way and where he wants it to go, like, yeah, that's actually very believable.
Makes total sense. We will get ourselves going here in the NFL, Doug. As we continue to monitor the quarterback moves around the NFL and, you know, we prepare for the draft, we have had our eyes on some of the obvious teams. The Jets, the Eagles, the Colts, Cowboys, Saints, all with a bit of a question mark at the quarterback position. One team perhaps under the radar, Carolina Panthers. NFL reporter Jeremy Fowler had this to say, quote, they have an aggressive owner, an aggressive GM, and an aggressive coach, and they are willing to scour the earth for one thing, their long-term solution at quarterback. They do not seem sold on Teddy Bridgewater.
Well, that's, I mean, I think that was obvious. He was a bridge quarterback to begin with.
Oh,
it's really a two-year deal.
You're better than that, Doug.
I'm actually not. I'm actually, you know me, but I'm not. But they said they needed to upgrade the quarterback position. So not surprising. I'm sure they'd love to get, you know, Deshaun, who Clemson's right down the street. You know, it's an hour and a half away. But, you know, I think what's really kind of troublesome to them is, like, there are two quarterbacks, Fields and, of course, Trevor Lawrence, that are grew up within a couple hours of Charlotte. And I don't think they can get either of them. And I'm not sure they're in love with Fields, but maybe Fields becomes their guy. But that's not a surprise. And they try to revamp the roster, and Bridgewater's a great placeholder, but he's not. I mean, remember, when he was in New Orleans, not this season, the season before, he had the fewest yards per throw of any quarterback in the NFL. Yes, they won without him, won with him as starting quarterback, but it wasn't because of him.
We'll wrap it up here with this, Doug, in the NBA. Bradley Beal's agent has come out to basically shut down all of the trade rumors surrounding Bradley Beal right now in Washington. He doesn't want to quit on something. He's an incredibly loyal guy, and he wants to always feel like he's done everything he can to help something or someone be successful. Bradley Beal currently leading the NBA in scoring at 32 points per game, despite Washington's 6-16 record, one of the worst in the league.
Come again? What was the... I know the hook to it, but what was it?
His agent shutting down all of the trade rumors. He's staying put in Washington despite several championship contending teams apparently keeping their eye on Washington and all of the rumors that continue to swirl about his future and with the Wizards.
Yeah, I think he's a foundational piece that they're not ready to move. And he's making a crazy amount of money, and it's hard to move him. So the Lakers have long lost that. But he makes so much money. I think this is actually a smart play from the agent, right? You don't want to be the agent that's pushing out the door, because then you don't get back what you want in return. You also lose equity. They love him in Washington. I'm sure he's frustrated. I don't think the Russell Westbrook acquisition was one that fixed them or helped them. But they are a year and a half away from Russell being off the books. Maybe that's the reason behind it. And that's Ryan Musial.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Today is the 31st anniversary of one of the greatest upsets in the history of sport. Okay, I'll tell you what the upset was and give you my greatest upsets next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
For all your last-minute Valentine's Day needs, head to 1-800-Flowers right now. 1-800-Flowers has sweets, treats, and beautiful Valentine's bouquets and arrangements. To order, go to 1-800-Flowers.com, click on the radio icon, and enter the code HERD, H-E-R-D. Let's get to the best for last.
It's almost the end of the show, but that doesn't mean we're phoning it in. Nope, we grind to the very last segment. It's time for Best for Last.
Okay, 31 years ago, on this day, Buster Douglas beat Mike Tyson in Japan. Now, look, it's very, very different now from it was then. It was on pay-per-view, but it just wasn't this. There was no social media, so all of a sudden it would pop up. I don't even remember what the hour of the day that it popped up that Mike Tyson was beaten. And it was on the cover of Sports Illustrated with his mouthpiece like hanging out of his mouth. He didn't train well, but he got beaten by Buster. Mike Tyson was, I mean, everybody loved him, but was afraid of him, right? He used to come out with the towel, hole cut out for the neck and the head, and then that was it. Black trunks, black shoes, no socks. He was the baddest man on the planet, and Mike Tyson was beaten. And with that, we give you the greatest upsets in the history of sport. Okay? No numbers. Just some of my favorites. Let's start with App State beating Michigan in the Big House. Now, Appalachian State would go on to competing for a 1AA, now FCS, title. And Michigan, that team with Chad Henne as quarterback, the running back was the all-time leading rusher. Like, they had a squad, but they would lose to Oregon. Dennis Dixon, I think, was the quarterback the next week. And they got housed by Ohio State last week of the season because, you know, they're Michigan. But it was losing to App State in the Big House, which was the first game ever on the Big Ten Network. Ever. New network, celebrating the Big Ten, beaten by App State. It's got to be one of the greatest upsets in the history of college football. UMBC beat Virginia. Now, Virginia didn't have DeAndre Hunter, who, of course, is now having a very good NBA career with the Hawks. Virginia would bounce back the next year and win national championship. They're still, I guess, defending national champions. And UMBC has never been the same. But for that one moment, you know, the statistic had always been a 16 had never beaten a 1. Well, they did. And makes it even sweeter that Virginia would go back the next year and win the national title. Giants beating the Patriots. Remember the 06 season? When the Patriots were undefeated, they play in the Super Bowl. And the Giants, who had lost to them but played them competitively, last game of the regular season, beat them, the David Tyree catch. But more than anything, Brady was constantly under duress from the pass rush. Giants beating the Patriots, ending the hopes of a 19-0 undefeated, complete regular and postseason, an all-timer. The Red Sox coming from 0-3 down to beat the Yankees. It wasn't just that no one had come from 3-0 down to win the game. It wasn't just that it was the Yankees and the Red Sox, and the Red Sox hadn't won a World Series in 86 years. Is that the beating in Game 3 was so bad, it just felt over. Then Dave Roberts, you know, is a pinch runner. He steals second base. And the rest, as they say, is history. Bloody sock, like the whole thing that year was incredible. Baseball was amazing. I thought Anthony Ruiz beating Anthony Joshua, who was previously under, I mean, Andy Ruiz beating Anthony Joshua. Do you remember Ruiz? Okay, Ruiz was, he's squatty, heavy, tatted up. I mean, straight kind of old school boxer. And when Anthony Joshua walks into the ring, you're like, look, I don't know who the heavyweight champion is for the last 15, 20 years, but that's what it looks like. And Ruiz kicked his ass. It was beautiful. It was boxing at its best. At its best. And remember, he was a last-minute call stand-in because the real opponent was tested positive for PEDs. It's crazy. All right, the Denver Nuggets beating the Seattle Supersonics. That was when Dikembe Mutombo, remember he had the ball, and he was holding up, yes! Sean Kemp, Gary Payton, who else was on that? That Sonics team was amazing. George Karl coached them to an NBA Finals. But in 1994, that was like the biggest upset I can think of early in the NBA playoffs when the number one seed goes down. Look, there's other college basketball ones that have taken place that are super interesting in the NCAA tournament, right? Remember Iowa State losing? Was that to East Tennessee State? Yeah. But those are the ones that, I mean, nothing to me compares to Mike Tyson going down at the hands of Buster Douglas and the mouthpiece hanging out of his mouth. All right, Doug Gottlieb for Colin. Colin will be back on Monday. Quick congratulations. I think this is the last time I'm going to be working until I fill in again with my man Ryan Music, who has been my producer for almost 4 years, and he will be one of the new producers on The Herd. And all I can tell you is I could not be more happy for him and his new wife, Kim, and what I hope will be a bigger check every 1st and 15th. And I leave you in great hands with Colin, who I think he's always had a great perspective on life, but has a whole new perspective on life after a little bit of a health scare. So anyway, call back Monday. We'll be back tomorrow with you. Hope you enjoyed. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is The Herd.